Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm your host, Rita Peters, and I'm joined today by our brand new co-host, Mark Meckler, who is joining us by phone from his home in Austin, Texas. Hello again, Mark.
Good to be with you again, Rita.
Well, Mark, as you know, if it's January, it's legislative season for the states. By the end of this month, 39 state legislatures will have gaveled in for their 2022 session. And all but seven of those will be finished by June. So this is a quick thing that we're talking about, and a lot of stuff is going to be happening in a short period of time. On average, over 100,000 bills go through the state legislatures across the country each year. And somewhere around 20% of those bills pass every year and become new laws. By comparison, Congress, which is pretty much in session all the time, sees an average of about 14,000 bills every session. Now, Mark, it seems to me like most Americans, my friends and acquaintances included, pay a lot more attention to what's happening in Congress than to what's happening in their state legislatures. Do you think that's true, and do you think that's how it should be?
I do think it's true, Rita, and I think it's true because of the cultural phenomenon of mass media. And so when you've got the major networks, or what we call the legacy media, whether it's left-wing media or right-wing media, what they're focused on are the things that affect everybody on a large scale. It's really the only thing they can actually effectively cover from a national perspective. Mm-hmm. And so when people turn on the news at night, whether they're watching CNN or Fox News, they're going to see things that are national issues more than they're going to see things that are their state issues. Unfortunately, I think that distorts our entire system of governance.
Yeah.
Because the way that the founders and the framers designed the system was the most important stuff is what happens at home. Mm-hmm. And the things that happen far away in Washington, D.C., they should be less important. They should affect you less than the stuff that's local. So while folks should really be paying attention to what's happening in their state legislature, there's a natural tendency to pay attention to the national.
Yeah, I completely agree. Under our Constitution, people forget this, but under our Constitution, the vast majority of policymaking power is left to the states. The federal government only has specific enumerated powers, and there aren't that many of them. State power, on the other hand, is much broader. So it's vitally important for citizens to pay attention to what's happening every year in their state legislatures. And I say that for practical reasons, but also for spiritual reasons. Practically, because state law, as you pointed out, is supposed to have the most direct and broad impact on our daily lives. But as Christians, we are called to love our neighbor, and public policy has such a huge impact on shaping our culture, shaping our values, that I just don't see how we can effectively love our neighbor well if we just neglect our right and our civic duty to be involved in state policymaking. Mark, do you agree, or how would you articulate the importance of people being involved in what's happening in government?
You know, of course, we draw a lot of this. Our belief system comes out of the Bible. And if you go back to the Old Testament and you look at how God told the Israelites to set up their system of governance, it was all about self-governing. It was all about choosing people to govern from among yourselves. And it broke it down all the way down to units of 10. So ultimately, the point was we are to govern ourselves. And in order to be a self-governing people, that means local governance. Self-governance, of course, belongs with ourselves individually, you know, that we're in relationship with God, that we live according to the way that God wants us to live. But then we turn outward. And you, as you said, I think you can sort of summarize the Ten Commandments is love your neighbor as you love yourself. We need to be active in our own community. So that means school boards, city councils, county boards, and state governments long before we pay attention to the federal government.
Yeah, That's right. Well, with that, let's talk about some common issues that we expect state legislatures across the country to spend a lot of their time on this year. And as I already pointed out, the majority of the state legislative sessions are only a handful of months long. There are a few states that go year-round, kind of like Congress, but most of the states, it's just a few short months. And so there's a lot to have happen, a lot to pay attention to in a short period of time. I've grouped the first three topics of what we expect to be hot in state legislatures as money stuff, election stuff, and COVID stuff. So let's start with money stuff, because in my experience, that usually ends up taking the majority of time in legislative session. But we're talking largely here about how the states are going to spend these federal stimulus funds. And you're much more of an expert on this than I am. Mark, what are your thoughts on the federal stimulus package and how states should respond to it?
Well, first, I hate that the federal government gives the states money at all.
Yeah.
This is a backwards relationship. It's not what was intended by the founders. In fact, what the founders really wanted was they wanted that the states would essentially support the federal government and not vice versa. And what happens is when the states take money from the federal government, there's always strings attached to that money. There's no exceptions to this. And so that means you end up with the federal government telling your state government what to do. Ultimately, it trickles down to the local governments. And so we lose some control over our own destiny here in the state. So number one, I don't like it. Number two, what I would hope that they would do, and if you're a citizen who's getting involved, is I would say you want them to use that money responsibly. And by that, generally, what I would mean is pay down debt, save money for a rainy day. To the extent that there are real infrastructure needs, spend money on infrastructure in a state. Almost everything else, I would say at this point, is just superfluous.
Yeah, I have always thought it just seemed so wrong. And in fact, you know, now at having studied the issues more, I think it actually doesn't just seem wrong. It is wrong that the federal government taxes us, the people. I mean, keep in mind, everyone, the federal government doesn't have a giant money tree. They don't have their own source of money. Their money comes from us. So they tax us, the citizens of the states, and then they promise the states that they'll give the state government some of the money they took from us in taxes if the states do these certain things that they want them to do. Wouldn't it be better, Mark, if the federal government was much more limited in its ability to tax, and then most of our tax dollars just stayed in the states to do what we want them to do?
Yes, and historically that's how it was. Prior to 1913 and the advent of the 16th Amendment, which is the federal income tax, the federal government had no real way to get money directly from the citizens of the states. And so what that meant is they had to come to the states for the money.
Yeah.
And I'm an advocate of we should go back to some system like that where the money flows from the citizen to the state to the federal government. Yeah. It's a much better balance of power.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, that's money stuff. We'll be watching for that. Let's move on to number two, election stuff. And this is super important. I have glanced over a couple of state legislatures and their lists of bills that have been proposed so far. And I'm seeing a lot of bills related to election audits, absentee voting, and voter ID. And of course, with audits, there's been so much discussion about the importance of audits since the last presidential election. Do you think that the states need better processes? And what do you think will come of that this year?
I do think the states need better processes. And I think the main reason is about trust. Mm-hmm. Now, whatever you think about election fraud and its effect on the election in the last cycle, we have a significant problem in this country is that people on both sides of the aisle no longer trust our election system. Now, of course, it's partisan. When Donald Trump loses the election, then Republicans say it's voter fraud. Mm-hmm. When Hillary Clinton loses the election, they say it was Russia collusion. You know, so it depends on the outcome of the election. What we really want is we want elections where we do the election. And I actually remember when it was like this, and we might be frustrated or unhappy that our side lost. But then we go on and we think about, well, how are we going to do better and win the next election? We're not relitigating the past election. And the way that we get to that point in our system, I think, are these audits, and to give the American people comfort that whoever wins, that every legal vote was counted. That's what we're trying to get to. And I think that's what these audits will help instill.
Yeah. Okay, well, the second issue under the bucket of election stuff is absentee voting. And I'll just be honest, I don't know a lot about absentee voting. I'm, I guess, an election day purist. I like to go in person on election day, cast my ballot, and get my little I voted sticker. So what's the deal with absentee voting? Should it be expanded or restricted? Does it increase fraud? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I am, like you, an election day purist. I actually, this is going to sound funny, I like waiting in line to vote.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, it feels like a very special day where I'm exercising my civic duty.
Yes.
I like to see my neighbors out there. It makes me feel like I'm part of this incredible experiment in liberty. And I think that's the way it should be. And I think everybody, with the exception of people who have legitimate certified excuses, they're out of town during an election, they're living elsewhere, they have health reasons, I think everybody else should be required to vote in person. And I really don't mind that people end up having to wait in line. I wouldn't mind paying more for more precincts that have balloting in them, so people can actually go to the polls. I would actually be a fan of an election system that has maybe 2 days where we vote instead of a single day, or even 3 days. I'm not a fan of absentee ballots. Absentee ballots themselves are inherently amenable to fraud. Anytime you don't have the person standing in front of you showing an ID and actually voting, you increase the possibility of fraud. When you run ballots through the mail, when you have the ability to collect ballots remotely, when people are dropping ballots in boxes, in collection boxes, all of these things create chain of custody problems and authentication problems. And even if there isn't fraud that's taking place, and I do think there is fraud taking place, but even if there weren't, the perception of vulnerability is a problem. And so I'm very much against absentee balloting.
Yeah. Okay. That was sort of my inclination, but I have wondered if there was more to it than I knew. Sort of along those same lines, there's the voter ID issues. And this is an issue that really puzzles me, because it seems like common sense to me that when you're doing something as important as voting, you should be required to show that you have an ID, that you have a legal right to be voting in that election. But then it always seems like it's Democrats claiming that any kind of voter ID requirement is just a veiled attempt to suppress minority votes. I don't really understand why they make that argument, because I don't understand why it's any harder for an American citizen who's a minority to show an ID card.
Okay. I mean, this to me is just completely fraudulent. The argument itself is specious and fraudulent. There's literally, this is going to sound outrageous, and I rarely make these kind of generalized absolutist statements, but I'm going to make it here. There has never been a single individual in a single hearing on this issue that's been willing to stand up and testify, I was unable to get an ID. And that's the argument, that it's difficult for people of color, people who live in the inner city, poor people, to get IDs. Now, these people have to show an ID if they have a bank account. They have to show an ID if they buy alcohol. You know, they have to show IDs to get into various venues nowadays. Nowadays, they have to show vaccination cards in a lot of places, but we're going to argue that they can't get an ID. It's just a lie. And frankly, if you go into the inner city, and I've seen videos of people doing this, and ask people if they know anybody who doesn't know how to get an ID, the question itself is actually considered insulting and racist.
Yes.
And so it's just fake. And the intent is, if you don't have to show an ID, it opens up again the possibility for fraud. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason to be against voter ID laws.
Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything. All right, let's move on to the third topic. And if you're just joining us today, we're talking about big issues that we expect to see moving through our state legislatures in 2022. And the third group of issues I call the COVID stuff. Vaccine mandates, mask mandates, executive orders. If you pay attention to the news, it seems like there is generally a partisan divide on mandates. So is that what we should expect? In other words, do we expect that, you know, Republicans are going to oppose vaccine mandates and mask mandates and Democrats are going to support them? And what does that tell us about the philosophical differences between the two parties?
Well, I think that's generally correct, but I want to be really careful about the distinction between the partisan divide at the legislative level and the partisan divide at the public level. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if you look at the polling, and Convention of States has done a lot of polling on this issue, along with the Trafalgar Group, what we find is that it's not as divided as people might think. While Democrats are more in favor of mandates, generally speaking, they're really not in favor of people being penalized in any way for not getting the vaccine.
Yeah.
And those numbers are very strong. And so the only purpose of a mandate really, or I should say the only enforcement mechanism, is some kind of penalty. And when you study the numbers, what you see is that people don't want penalties imposed. They don't like this idea. And the reason that you see people being in favor of mandates, more Democrats being in favor of mandates, or anybody for that matter, is there are people who are already vaccinated.
Yeah.
And so for them to answer that question in the polling, it's kind of simple, right? You're already vaccinated, so you don't really care. So you just say yes in answer to the poll. It's pretty easy stuff. But where the rubber really hits the road is, well, if you think people should be forced to get vaccinated, do you think there should be any penalties for it? And the vast majority of American people say no. Mm-hmm. And so this is a divide between the legislative and the public, where the public's really not in support of any kind of penalty. And that means in reality, they're not really in support of a mandate.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And from my just common anecdotal experience, it seems to me like most people want to get vaccinated, think that other people should get vaccinated, but we don't want to be told by the government that we have to do it. We want to make our own medical decisions when it comes to vaccines.
Yeah, and I think that's just generally true for human beings on almost everything.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about this a lot in Convention of States, that the question around Convention of States isn't what should we do, it's who decides.
Yes.
And when you ask people on almost any subject who should decide for you, you or somebody else, everybody says, well, I should decide for me.
Right.
And that's the very basis of self-governance. We believe people have agency, people have free will as given to them by God, and they should decide for themselves. That's a general presupposition of our system of governance and our religious worldview.
Yes. Now, on the whole topic of COVID, the other type of legislation that I'm seeing pop up is legislation that deals with the balance of powers between the legislative and executive branches. So a lot of legislatures are looking to limit the executive power, like the power of the governor or the state health department, to impose mandates, declare public health emergencies, and that sort of thing. Do you think that is a good thing that we're seeing legislatures jealous for their share of the power in this?
I do. I think it's a good thing, and I think it's far too rare. And so there is a general abdication of authority by almost everybody in government. They want to put the decision making on somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so to see the legislatures reasserting their authority as the representatives of the people, I think is good. And I also think what we're seeing is just a natural development. We've not seen something like this before. Most of the emergency powers that are granted to governors or health authorities constitutionally or legislatively came up or were drafted and passed in a much different time. It used to be very difficult to get to the legislature. People couldn't hop in a jet or just drive their car across the state in a half a day or a day. And it might take them days or weeks to get to the legislature. And so giving the governors this emergency power, it made sense. The governor was going to generally be right there in the Capitol. They could make these decisions. The roads are out. There's been a natural disaster, whatever it was. Nowadays, with our ability to communicate remotely, with our ability to travel so quickly and so easily, having these longer term emergency powers, it just doesn't make sense in our scheme of government today.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Okay, well, that was the COVID stuff. The fourth topic that we will see many state legislatures address in 2022 is one that Mark and I are intimately familiar with, and that's the Convention of States. States across the nation will be considering resolutions applying for a convention of the states to propose constitutional amendments that will impose fiscal restraint on Washington, limit its power and jurisdiction, and set term limits for federal officials. And we already saw this get started the first full week of session in the state of Nebraska. Earlier this week, they took up the Convention of States resolution, and we saw hours of debate on it that went very well. We're looking for a good final outcome there, potentially as early as next week. And Mark, quite frankly, I think this may be the most important measures that state legislatures will take up because it's the one that has real power to restore constitutional integrity. And that's something that's going to have a really long-term effect on our nation. Do you agree?
I agree with that. And in traveling around, I've heard a bunch of legislators say, and I've heard Senator Rick Santorum, who now works with us, say, this is the most important vote that any state legislator will take in their entire state legislative career. Mm-hmm. And that's really saying something. And the reason he says it, and I agree with it, and a lot of state legislators agree with it, is because of what you said. We have a problem in this country with what I would describe as a collapse of federalism. All this power has ended up in the hands of Washington, D.C. Now, frankly, not only just in the legislative, executive, and judicial branches, but in the deep state itself, which is unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. All this power is now concentrated there. And we have only one way to fix it and go back to federalism. And in my opinion, the only way to save the country is to go back to federalism, mm-hmm. is we take that power away from Washington, D.C., and we give it back to the people and the states. That's what the framers intended. It's why they put this second clause of Article 5 in there. And, you know, I don't mean to sound doomsday-ish, but if we don't do this, I worry whether the country survives. We're so divided, and this system of federalism was intended to be the buffer zone for a nation that's always been divided. Without federalism, I'm not sure the nation can hold together.
Yeah, I agree. And federalism is a beautiful thing, and really it's something that Americans should all be able to agree on because it lets states do things the way the states want to do them, and it enables people to vote with their feet. If you don't like the way Oklahoma is being run, you can move to California and experience something totally different. It really is a beautiful design that the founders gave us, and I'm eager to see us get back to that.
Yeah, and you know, it's important that people understand the history of the country, and you know, I'm going to give you just a brief nutshell. We've always hated each other. And that's really, and I mean that with all sincerity. I've really studied this. We didn't like each other prior to the American Revolution, and we joined hands because there was an existential threat in King George. Mm-hmm. We didn't like each other after the American Revolution, so we formed the Articles of Confederation. Didn't work because it didn't actually create a government that had any power. We didn't like each other so much that in the 1860s, we went to war against each other in the Civil War, and we forced a union on each other. So we've always been a divided nation, and that's okay. It's okay to have a diversity of opinion. It's okay to have different styles of governance, different cultures in different areas. When it starts to fall apart is when we try to force sameness on everybody from Washington, D.C. Yeah. That doesn't work. And the only system designed to deal with people with this broad diversity of opinions and cultures and governments and ways of life, the only system that works for that is federalism. We've moved away from it, and the Convention of States moves us back towards that.
Absolutely. Well, we just have a few minutes left, but before we close, I just want to urge everyone who's listening to this program to get in the habit of monitoring and even participating in your state government, and particularly your state legislature. you know, the reason that most policymaking authority was left to the states is partly because our state governments are so much more accessible to regular people. And monitoring and participating in the process is really pretty straightforward. A legislator introduces a bill, which is just a proposal for a law. That bill will go to a committee hearing, and the committee of legislators will schedule a hearing date where members of the public like you and me can go in and give testimony. After the legislation passes through committee, assuming the committee votes in favor of it, it goes to the Senate or House floor where only the legislators debate that piece of legislation, and then they vote on it. And it's amazing that today you can stream not only the floor sessions of your state legislature where just the legislators are debating, but in almost every state, you can listen to and watch committee hearings and committee testimony online. And it is quite interesting and enlightening. You know, if we want to continue to be a self-governing people, we have to be involved. We have to monitor what's going on, and we have to participate. And I just want to say, before I ask Mark for any final comments he wants to make, as Christians, let us not neglect our duty to pray faithfully for our government officials, that they will have wisdom and discernment, and that they will have the desire to do what is right and to govern justly. Mark, final comments from you?
That is a matter of faith. Our engagement in the process is a matter of faith. I hear a lot of Christians say, I don't want to be involved in politics. Politics are messy. And my answer is, the church is messy.
Yeah.
We're human beings. It's always messy. But we're supposed to take our faith out into the world. We're not supposed to contain it in a building. It's not supposed to be just a private thing. We have an obligation to look outward into the world around us and take what we know out into the world and make it a better place. And one of the places you can do that and have a major impact is in politics.
That's right. Well, that's all of our time for today. We want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services, Blessings Christian Bookstore, Sunshine Ministries with Christian Radio, Wishing Well Florists and Travel Services, and our good friends at New Beginnings Church and Garber's Church of the Brethren in Harrisonburg. Thank you all for listening, for your encouragement, and for your continued financial support. If you'd like to make a donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. If you'd like to send a personal note to our Crossroads team, you can do so at the same address, P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. And finally, if you'd like to listen to the program again or share it with your friends, go to valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. I'm Rita Peters with Mark Meckler and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week for another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.
Rejoice, 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 rej